Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your show host, J. Richard Jones, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. Today, we're going to talk about some very interesting approaches to architectural and engineering design. We're going to talk about the relevance, and we're going to talk about some of the success stories that are available. Canada has a number of good service providers that are able to provide the expertise that is required, not just in Canada, but all over the world. Now, to do that, we're bringing on an expert to talk a little more about that, who is with a company that just celebrated their 40th year in business. They've been very successful, and they attribute that to very hard work and support from the industry, both in Canada and around the world. We're talking about the company called Vard Marine. And joining us today is our special guest, Derek Buxton. He's VP of Business and Development. And Derek, I'd like to welcome you to our show. There's a lot to get into today and unpack.
Well, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So to start off, Derek, I want to talk about your announcement at CANSEC. You were talking about the next generation offshore patrol vessel that was unveiled at CANSEC in June. Can you tell us more about the design and the proposed approach?
Absolutely. I mean, we were very pleased after about 2 years of effort working behind the scenes with our team vigilance partners to unveil the initiative at CANSEC. It's what we hope to be the first in a long run of next generation offshore patrol vessels designed by Vard Marine, and in this instance built in Canada by our partners at Hull Shipyards, with support from Thales as the combat systems integrator, as well as a couple of overseas collaborators, SH Defense and Fincantieri. We can talk a little bit more perhaps later with regards to, you know, what specifically each of those partners brings to the mix. But we're very clearly proposing this to the Royal Canadian Navy as a replacement for their Kingston-class maritime coastal defense vessels, which we know are entering or coming up on end of service life in the very near future, and that have become, quite frankly, a workhorse of the Royal Canadian Navy fleet. They do a lot of heavy lifting have, you know, served the Canadian Navy exceptionally well. What we're hoping to do with Vigilance is propose something which is more modern, takes advantage of some of the latest technologies and sort of operational doctrine in how certain missions are conveyed and delivered, but also in sort of short and simple terms, what we're hoping with Vigilance is to propose something that is everything the Kingston class is and aspires to be.
Now, in what you've proposed, if you're successful, will that keep all of the shipbuilding and design work in Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're pretty committed to the whole notion that this capability will be designed, built, and equipped in Canada. We're hoping, insofar as possible, to maximize Canadian content, and anybody who has a service product system or component to offer to the program that is, part of a Canadian organization, we're going to take a very, very close look at. We already have a very strong core team of five members, but we're interested in building that out and building as broad a possible coalition of other Canadian businesses that can support the program.
Now, Vard Marine, we were talking about this before the show. I mean, you guys have, you're one of the largest shipbuilders in focusing in offshore patrol, and you've done a lot of work over a number of years. You're not just in Canada, but you're well known all over the world. Can you tell us a little more about your international presence?
Yeah, just to be precise, Vard Marine itself is a small company which exists in Canada. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Vard Group, which is Norwegian based. Vard Marine itself as a designer doesn't build ships, but we work with a number of shipyards and different partners around the world to design ships that are built. And that includes shipyards both within our own group, whether it be in Vard or the Fincantieri group, or, you know, third party shipbuilders in partnership in places all over the world. And so we have had a successful business for 40 years. We serve the full gamut of the marine industry. Commercial, government, military customers. We work with ship owners. We also work with shipyards. We're very flexible in our approach. But one thing is consistent across all of that is our approach and our philosophy when it comes to designing vessels. We're very passionate about designing vessels, and we believe that the best solutions are those that are born from a very early stage discussion between the expert ship operator and the expert ship designer, and if possible, the expert ship builder. Sometimes the procurement strategy with different programs doesn't permit that, but when it does, it certainly lends a great deal of advantage. You can have those early stage discussions. You can help the ship operator owner understand what it is they're asking for, educate them about the latest and greatest technologies and how they might apply in satisfying their need. You can then also talk to the shipyard with regards to their facility, their infrastructure, their build strategy, which is quite unique from shipyard to shipyard. And the confluence of all of that with an expert ship designer like ourselves, you know, sets up a very strong foundation for an optimal program from the get-go. And so we're not about, here's our catalog of vessel designs, pick the one you want and, you know, pick a couple of options like the color of the curtains. We're about sort of making sure that we tailor the solution to meet the unique needs of every user, because every user has a very unique need. And they're different from the next user. And so you look at the differences between the U.S. Coast Guard and the Canadian Coast Guard, two completely different organizations with different mandates and missions. And so what's good for one is not necessarily good for the other. And so that's our approach, collaboration, bring all the stakeholders together early on where you can influence change without impacting significantly program schedule or cost. Once you have a good design baseline, the planning then starts and the program's off to a great start.
So really, in an effect, it helps you to customize to the specific need of the country, but it's also a measure twice and cut once approach. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, exactly. And so you can influence the most change at the early stage without having an impact on program cost or schedule. You arrive at that baseline solution and then you move ahead. And, you know, we find when those conditions exist that allow that early stage collaboration, those are the most successful programs. And so a lot of countries that are procuring ships will seek a quote unquote proven design, which we believe is a little bit of a fallacy. That design is proven as delivered for a specific customer to meet a specific set of needs. If your needs differ, then that's not a proven design for you. What you really need is a proven designer who has a track record and history in the type of ship you're looking to procure, but you're not looking to replicate and build somebody else's ship. Because if you do, you're just accepting a compromise on your own needs. And that's a suboptimal outcome for the end user.
Makes a lot of sense. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. I want to come back to what we were talking about earlier, team vigilance. The team vigilance partners, what do you bring to the table in that relationship that differentiates your offer from other potential bid teams?
Yeah, well, we think that we offer the only truly Canadian solution across the entire shipbuilding value chain. And so now Vard Marine is the only naval architecture company in Canada with the type of track record we have, with offshore patrol vessels being one of our specialties. Another consortium would have to lean on a foreign design. And so we're seeing a foreign designer selling a design, the ability then to market that from a Canadian taxpayer-funded program kind of flies in the face of the National Shipbuilding Strategy and some of its underpinning sort of principles or objectives, which is economic development and the betterment of the Canadian marine sector. And so we can provide the Canadian design solution, because quite frankly, that's the first step in the value chain. You can't build a ship until it's designed. And if you're establishing a set of policies in the NSS, you know, with a series of objectives, one being economic development, as I've spoken to, and another being, you know, making sure we have a strategic capability indigenous to Canada. If you have to rely on foreign designers, then your marine sector does not have the strategic capability to, in a self-contained way, deliver a ship. And so that's what this team brings, is the Canadian content across the entire shipbuilding value chain. So we can design it. Thales Canada can do the electronic systems and the combat management and the combat systems integration. Peddle Shipyards, obviously, Southwest Ontario, the largest underutilized shipbuilding facility in Canada, has a very complete and impressive facility. And for a vessel of this type, absolutely no issues with regards to that facility being able to build this ship. And so they can build it. And then, as I said before, building that full coalition of Canadian companies to supply equipment, systems, and solutions and services to the program will kind of round that out. People might question, then why do you have two foreign companies as two of the core members of Team Vigilance? And the answer to that is quite simple, because they enable other Canadian companies to participate in a very substantive and meaningful way. And so just to expand on that a little bit, Fincantieri is the world's one of the world's largest shipbuilders, certainly the largest in Europe. Over their 230-year history, they've delivered 7,000 ships. And so that kind of experience, the knowledge that comes from operating 18 shipyards on four continents around the world, is going to really quickly help jumpstart this program with Hedl in Southwest Ontario. So they bring that to the table as a strategic industrial partner. Anybody who then is a participant in the program, a Canadian business, quite potentially then has access to the Fincantieri supply chain. And so you can imagine the potential that exists there if a small Canadian company on the backs of this program then gets an order from Fincantieri to provide a component to a large multi-ship program somewhere else in the world. And so that's the benefit that they bring. SH Defense out of Denmark is a specialist with regards to modular mission payload handling systems. And the design of the ship is very modular in its outlook. And so what we're able to do with modularity is make this ship a true operationally flexible, multi-role asset for the Canadian Navy. But that requires us to have modular payloads. It's the integration of systems and components into the modular payload system, which then gives any other Canadian solutions provided the ability to integrate their equipment seamlessly into our ship. And similarly, SH Defense already has Canadian suppliers that feed their international supply chain, and they'd be looking to set up a Canadian partner here in Canada to support this program as well. And so, Very much in both instances, a couple of companies that add a tremendous amount of value in a substantive way to enable Canadian companies, small and medium enterprises, to participate in this program.
So there's certainly a lot of benefit to a Team Canada approach. Derek, I want to come over to some of the discussions that we've heard around the questions of should the Kingston class be replaced versus a life extension program. What are your thoughts around that and aging capability versus a new build solution?
Yeah, I think the whole aging capability is an age old story here in Canada. So I served 21 years in the Navy and then another 11 years with the Canadian Coast Guard. And unfortunately, unlike other countries who seem to have, solved the issue with almost a continuous build program or a fleet renewal program on an ongoing basis, we tend to sort of be in this 30, 35, 40-year cycle where we do a whole bunch of activity all at once, and then the ships get old, they rust out, and they end up taking themselves out of service. We have capability gaps, and then there's a big rush to sort of renew everything all at once. That was certainly the situation we found ourselves in when the NSS was born, and the NSS in part was all about solving that problem, making sure we got away from bust and boom, and we built up the industry and we maintained the industry, because if you don't maintain the industry, all the skill sets, all the capabilities, all the infrastructure atrophies, and then it costs that much more in time, effort, and money to re-energize it and re-establish it when that cycle comes around again. And so the whole practice of keeping ships in service longer than they were intended kind of feeds into that problem. And so that is a fundamental principle, I think, is a case that suggests why life extend the Kingston class when you can replace it. But of course, that's a decision for the Canadian Navy and the Canadian government to make with regards to their priorities, how they're going to solve those issues, and where they're going to prioritize their funding. Far be it for us in industry to sort of suggest, you know, a specific outcome. We'll be responsive, and we're suggesting in this instance we can be responsive in a decision to replace the Kingston with Vigilance class. The other thing I would say is that, you know, the Kingston, as I said, has done a lot of heavy lifting as being a very versatile asset, but it's being deployed into situations which it wasn't necessarily designed for. And although it's performed very admirably and has done good service with the Canadian Navies, that can be improved. And so it was initially intended to be a maritime coastal defense policy, largely within a domestic mission set. But it has been deployed and has performed overseas quite admirably in places like West Africa, doing counter-piracy, anti-trafficking type work, supporting the international rules-based system. Recently in Haiti, supporting kind of the challenges they're having with law enforcement in Haiti. It's been involved in drug interdictions. You know, it's being deployed into the Mediterranean and other locations in addition to the domestic mission set. It's a small boat. It doesn't have a big top speed, and it's not a very sea-kindly vessel in that it's a rough ride in transoceanic voyages, certainly when you hit heavy weather. And so with a different vessel like Vigilance, we address all of that. We give the Navy the ability to deploy. We give it an extended range of 5,000 nautical miles, the opportunity to forward base the asset overseas in a forward operating location, should there be a need to do so, as well as satisfy all of the domestic mission set that's needed, to be performed by the Navy. And we're doing that in a platform which is sea-kindly and can transit in a faster, but also a safer and more comfortable manner. And so that's important. And the other key point that sort of, bolsters the argument, if you will, for replacing these vessels is the mission set has changed in some instances. But in other instances, how an existing mission is delivered has also changed. And so, again, that's where the modularity comes in. You know, mine hunting and route survey was done in the past from the vessel with towed systems and onboard sensors. That's not the case today. It's all done remotely, remotely operated or autonomously operating offboard systems, whether they be aerial, surface, or subsurface. And that's the new mindset, the new doctrine with regards to how some of these missions are delivered. Today we have an evolving warfare area called subsea warfare, or the protection of subsea infrastructure, our gas lines, our data links, our power cables. We see threats on that type of infrastructure. Well, you perhaps need a different mission payload to deal with that, a lot of which is still evolving, and we don't know what that mission payload looks like. But by having an asset that's flexible enough to take standardized mission payloads, you can build a mission payload and then outfit the ship to perform that evolving future mission. So it's all about giving, a newer capability that's in keeping with the latest technology, the latest operational doctrine, with the ability to be flexible and remain relevant over the future lifespan of the vessel as some of these new missions, come into force. And so it's the ability to, do what it is you need to do today with the latest and greatest technology, but also the ability to be flexible enough to do what you're going to be doing in the future that you don't know yet what it's all about. And so those, I think, are very compelling arguments for replacing the Kingston class. Enhanced capability, flexibility into the future, And addressing the problems with age and obsolescence with a new capability, and having the ability to maybe get into a more of a continuous build cycle enabled by the National Shipbuilding Strategy and the development of another center of excellence in Ontario.
Well, regardless of the decision, it sounds like the platform that you work with is very flexible and will be able to accommodate, which is great. It's, things have probably changed quite a bit, as you've identified. I think that, you know, one thing that really resonates is the designing in Canada is just so important. We've touched on that a little bit, but do you want to finish off this segment by talking a little more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, we've been in business 40 years. Way back in 1983, we had a contract from the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Ocean to design our first offshore patrol vessel. It's a ship which is today known as the Canadian Coast Guard ship, the Leonard J. Cowley. So that was the first offshore patrol vessel. Since then, we've had a number of other offshore patrol vessels, all born from that first opportunity that we delivered a 70-meter offshore patrol vessel to the Mauritius Coast Guard. That was, in fact, when it was built, the flagship of the Mauritius Coast Guard, and it was known as the Vigilant. And so we've almost come full circle with the naming here. We subsequently had contracts to build vessels for the Irish Naval, or to design vessels that were built for the Irish Naval Service, 80-meter offshore patrol vessels, vessels that, you know, that user was very happy with, that they came back to us for repeat business. And we subsequently designed a longer 90-meter offshore patrol vessel. So between the two classes, six vessels in total for the Irish Naval Service. In between them, we were successful in winning a contract to build the Protector-class offshore patrol vessels for the Royal New Zealand Navy, two vessels that have been in service and operated in some of the most arduous conditions in the world, the Southern Ocean, in and around New Zealand. And we've also been contracted to design vessels for the UK Royal Navy, HMS Echo, HMS Enterprise, which are, if they haven't been already, they're in the process of being decommissioned now. But two of the hardest working ships in the Royal Navy fleet that have seen, you know, over 500,000 nautical miles of service and have been deployed into multiple scenarios. And do things that are considered multi-role in nature, and things like command and control for mine warfare. And so that's very much in keeping with what we're proposing here. And then more recently, we undertook the design of the Arctic Offshore Patrol Ship for the Royal Canadian Navy, the design that the Navy then took to Irving and said, please build us these ships. As we've seen, that's been a hugely successful program. And from a performance standpoint, those ships have exceeded expectations. So that's a little bit of a validation. What's important about those ships is the fact that this is a hybrid approach, if you will. It's a commercial and military specification combined in a hybrid approach. And so you get the best of sort of the more affordable commercial approach with the military aspects where it's needed. Exactly the same approach that we're proposing here for Vigilance, keeps the cost down, but is military where it needs to be military. And so that's given us a very good insight into, you know, contemporary Canadian operations and doctrine. And then the biggest feather in our cap by far has been to be successfully selected to design the U.S. Coast Guard's offshore patrol cutter. Now, depending on how you're counting, whether you're counting number of ships or tonnage, the U.S. Coast Guard, in fact, is the world's fifth or seventh largest navy. And so to have won this program was huge. 25 ships, the biggest dollar value procurement in U.S. Coast Guard history. And it's designed by a little old design firm north of the border, you know, headquartered in Vancouver with offices in Ottawa as well. And so a huge win for us. So all told, and there's other countries as well. South Africa is another one that I haven't mentioned. And so we consider ourselves to be a reference player internationally when it comes to the design of offshore patrol vessels. And so we do truly believe that we have all the experience, the positive track record, and the wherewithal to develop a solution tailored to the unique needs of the Royal Canadian Navy as a replacement for the Kingston class.
So Derek, just why is designing in Canada so important?
And so as a global reference player in offshore patrol vessels, the reason why it's important to us that Canadian taxpayer-funded programs are designed in Canada by Canadian design companies, and there's a number of them. We're not the only solution. There is a number of internationally reputable design firms here in Canada. It's because you can't have that track record of success with a particular record unless your home nation takes that step and spends their own tax dollars in procuring your services. And so over 40 years, we've become an international reference player in offshore patrol vessels because 40 years ago, the Canadian taxpayer funded a design program for us. And so every time we send Canadian taxpayers offshore with work to a foreign designer, we forego that opportunity to replicate that type of track record. And so we're pretty passionate about the need for NSS, not only to develop the shipbuilding aspect of the shipbuilding value chain, but also the design aspect. Because as I said at the outset, you can't build a ship until it's designed, and you can't truly claim to have a strategic national capability in the marine sector unless you also develop your design and engineering skill set.
You've been listening to Vanguard Radio, and we've talked about a lot today. I mean, we've talked about the Vigilance Next Generation Offshore Patrol Vessel. We've talked about Team Vigilance and the value of having a Team Canada approach. We've talked about design and architecture for OPVs, and we've certainly had a good discussion about whether you take the approach of extending the life and aging capability of a vessel versus a new business solution. And we've had an expert join us today, and he's provided us with a lot of compelling information. We want to thank our very special guest today for joining us, Derek Buxton, VP of Business Development with Vard Marine. And we certainly have covered a lot. Thank you so much, Derek.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.